Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Leeds Act podcast. I'm here with Rocco Dean and our favourite Irishman, Dara Cunningham. I didn't even let you say hello, Rocco. I'm so.
What a Friday night. What a Friday night, Ellen Road.
Leeds came back from 1-0 down to beat Leicester. But before we get into that, special thank you to Bass and Bly, sponsors of the podcast, is David Dean's jingle.
Oh, Bass and Bly and magic. Justin wears a magic hat. Independent, trusted dealers. You'll hear it on Leeds Act. Canon, Nikon, Fuji, Leica, Sony and the rest. If you want a decent camera, Bass and Bly have all the best. 60 years in cameras, we really know our stuff. Justin's here to serve you, he can never do enough. If it's cameras that you're after, pop in for a chat. When at home for footy, Justin listens to Leeds Act. Oh, Bass and Bly and magic, both new and used on view. If you need binoculars, we've plenty of them too. Spotting scopes and lenses, all state of the art. Use Bass and Bly in Harrogate and you'll be very smart. Oh, Bass and Bly and magic, we don't sell no tat. We are here to serve you, you will hear it on Leeds Act. With Rocco and Bielsa, books and James with so much wit. Bass and Bly sells cameras and all the other shit.
Get your used camera gear, cameras, lenses, binoculars and spotting scopes all at bassandbly.com. Link is in the podcast episode and on our website. Or if you're in Harrogate, go to 6 Beulah Street and say hello to Justin. I think Justin enjoyed it, judging by his text message. Yeah, incredible night. You're going to have to help me out because I've got no idea where to start with this. I'm still absolutely buzzing. Barely slept last night because of the excitement and adrenaline. Just incredible. One that will go down as as you put it, Rocco, an all-time classic.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I honestly think, I mean, as time goes by, I feel like we'll look back at this and like question ourselves, because at the moment, I'm absolutely certain that that was the best night at Elland Road I've ever had. Like, even versus like the European nights under O'Leary, you know, that UEFA Cup run when he was running on the pitch, hugging his babies, and then the Champions League nights, Deportivo, which was, you know, the absolute hype for me. But it wasn't, I don't think it was as crazy. Like the last 10 minutes and the manner of the win, and then the celebrations afterwards were just completely off the scale. And like Archie's goal, you know, the fact that he scored it, just absolute, well, I say facts, but anyway, that he scored it, it just made it so unbelievable and emotional. I'm just blown away by it. What an unbelievable night.
Yeah, I have to say, as someone who wasn't at the game, I think I speak for every Leeds fan in the world, all couple of million of us, when I'm so envious of the 30,000+, whatever it was, 36,000, 37,000 people that managed to actually get into Elland Road for that game. Like, what an absolutely magic occasion. Seeing the fans stay behind after the game, singing, the players, the sheer excitement on the players, the unity as well between the players and the fans at the end. I just think we all wanted to be part of that. So I think you guys are just so lucky that you got to be part of that yesterday.
Before they didn't. Oh yeah, you were almost delayed getting back from Amsterdam, weren't you? Crikey. Imagine if you'd missed that rocket. God.
Which was the first
forgiving KLM.
The first text James put into her WhatsApp group after the match. Imagine if your flight had been delayed, Rocco.
My sister, who I sit next to, Sarah, couldn't go to this game because she generally can't go to evening matches. And Joe, who wrote our theme tune for the podcast, came with me. And I said before the game, just before it kicked off, I said, this is the sort of game where players like Archie Gray get a goal. And the reason why I felt that is because if you're going to have an all-time classic where you want a big victory and a big moment in a season, it's always the big players that pop up. Even if they're not the big players yet, but they're going to be there, it tends to be them. And then you look back, they're part of your history. And I know we're going to jump around. I don't care. Like, this is how we're going to do this episode. But that goal, when it went in from Archie, like we're in that northwest corner and he came over to that corner with his arms out wide celebrating. And I had tunnel vision, just screaming with excitement, bodies flying over me and the cop as well. It'll be etched in my memory forever. It's just unbelievable moment. Like, so, so good. And I feel really grateful for witnessing it, because we've seen some crap at Elland Road in the last few seasons as well. And that was kind of like the peak, and it's the top peak moment that I'm hugely grateful for. It was amazing.
Would you say it was one of your best moments at Elland Road?
Definitely. It's got to be up there, yeah. I can't think of anything else. The only other one, maybe, is Viduka getting his fourth against Liverpool. But
Beckford, yeah. Bristol Rovers.
Yeah.
I mean, that's hard to beat. But even that, I mean, that was like sheer relief, and we still had half an hour still to go. But I don't know, it was just like the fact that Archie scored, it made it so much better. I mean, I'd been saying to my mate Paddy last week that, like, I didn't want to see him score in an away game because I wanted to be there to witness his first goal. And then the next week he does it. And he did it two days before. Well, hang on. He was 2 days younger when he scored his first goal than Eddie was, which is quite nice as well. Nice little thing. But yeah, I'm like you, James. Like, I don't think I'll ever forget that. Like, that moment, the roar when it went in, like, it was just different. They were against, you know, just, people just couldn't believe what had just happened. I went for a run down a few seats. There's no safe standing in my bit of the cop just yet. And thank God for that, because, yeah, free reign just to go completely crazy. It was phenomenal.
Yeah, I know one person who's going to be absolutely sick listening to this. That's my nephew. So he's 20 years old and he's really into the younger players. Like, when Somerville was coming through, he'd never shut up about Somerville. But we had a bit of a watch party at my brother Shay's house. There was seven of us there watching the match. Everything's going great. He goes to the toilet and Archie Gray scores and we're jumping around and he's in the toilet thinking, they're messing out there. We haven't scored. Oh, and he missed God. It. Imagine missing that. Oh, sick. Sick.
Go on, Rock.
I was just going to thank him because, yeah, normally when you go to the toilet, it does sort of like brings those sorts of moments out. So, yeah, it's all thanks to him.
I don't know about you, Rocco, but going into the ground, I felt all right. There's a few nerves, and there was a guy who was sat behind us. There's a reason for me saying this. The guy who sat sitting behind us, and he was massive. I'd never seen him before, and he was wearing like a varsity type jacket, a cap, like big beard. His arms were like the size of Roberto Carlos's thighs. He was just ginormous, and just sort of nodded to him, said hello, and forgot about it. And I'll come back to him in a bit. I'll tell you about him. But I mean, the crisp eating knobs, they were playing quite well, really, weren't they, Leicester? Unfortunately, first half was. I know we talk about the good moments of the atmosphere, but they did kill it with that goal as well, and it started to veer into that place of people panicking and sort of shouting and voicing their negative opinions. It wasn't the best for a large part of the first half.
Nah, it definitely wasn't. Honestly, I was getting annoyed. I was getting really annoyed, actually. At one point, there was a point where Melier passed it out of play. Actually, I think Rodon was to blame there. He could have kept that in. But anyway, like, Melier passed out and the whole cop went mental. And I was like screaming, like, calm down. Like, what are you going on about? You know, we're in a, you know, it's not even like a title decider. And people, I felt like everyone was just too agitated. And I think it probably was maybe like a bit of shock and disappointment that we were struggling so much to play. I mean, Leicester did an unbelievable job on us. I don't know what they did tactically, but it was absolutely sublime, really. Like, we just couldn't do anything. There was no space in the middle. There was no space out wide. And we just really struggled. And I think the fans, they didn't really help until we actually got the goal, which is another thing in Farkas, you know, another feather in Farke's cap and the players as well for sticking with it. There was a point in the second half where I noticed Farke, like the fans were going mad again because there was a misplaced pass, probably Rutter did something wrong because he was, you know, people getting annoyed at him as well. And like Farke held his hands out and like, you know, imploring his team to stay calm. They, you know, it was all them to get themselves back in it. And then it was all the fans for the last 10 minutes to get us over the line. There's no doubt about that. We absolutely, yeah, terrified Leicester like we did for the Bristol Rovers game all those years ago.
Yeah, I think you have to give Leicester credit, don't you? Like they set up so well against us. I've never seen a team, well, not this season. I haven't seen a team come to Elland Road and do what they did to us. They denied us space all over the pitch. I think, you know, man for man, they're probably the only team that can match us in the league in terms of power, pace and quality on the ball. So the job they'd done on us to deny us that space, like out wide they had their fullbacks pushing right up. Like if Somerville and Nanto was taking the ball in, they were right up against them. There was no space to turn. I think at one point Ruter went out wide and actually did manage a turn, but other than that, couldn't get around them. Denying a space in midfield, they were snapping into tackles. In all honesty, if that was Leeds, you'd be saying it was a fairly perfect away first half performance. And then they got even better in the second half. I mean, the first 15, 20 minutes of the second half, they were excellent. I was screaming for changes to be made. But yet, despite that, we still had probably the best chances. Like that one Peru had early on in the first half where Nanto had a lovely flick around the corner to him. If he'd have done the same flick around the corner for Somerville who was coming in the back post, that 100% would have been a goal. And then the other one with Nando, where he was clear through and he took a touch and all he had to do was smash it. But he tried to take it inside and again, his touch was just too heavy. I mean, maybe taking it inside was actually okay because he did get round the defender, which I think was Fies or whatever his name is. But he obviously just hit it too far. But so despite the fact that Leicester were on top, we just still looked dangerous. So for me, I never felt bad about it. I always felt we were going to get something out of this game, that we were going to score. But were we going to do it before they did? That was they got a second one. That was the question.
I think that was the thing for me. Like Rocco, you said it was unbelievable that we turned it around. I wasn't surprised that we turned it around. I was more just like unbelievably excited at the idea that we could do it. It was just incredible. I'm going to keep saying it, but that's how I feel. Feel now, like blown away by just the whole thing because of how good it was. And for our first goal that got us back into the game. I mean, the substitutes you mentioned there, Dara. We were sort of crying out for substitutes, and us three on this podcast before have talked about that and Farke making those substitutes earlier in the game to make it change. And last night was one of those nights where they kept knocking on our door, and we were so lucky that they were missing chances. I think Daka missed an absolute sitter, and I think shortly after that Farke made those substitutes. And I think it was on about 65 minutes where Bryn said, when I watched back the highlights, that Leeds' job is to just stay in the game. It's about 65 minutes and job is to stay in the game. Give yourself something to go into that last 15 minutes or so. And it was, and everyone around us thought, Dan James, Bamford, get them on. And, you know, we can start to sort of pull them in a different way. And it didn't click straight away when they came on, but you could see us starting to just creep back into the game and take a bit off Leicester. And then even they made like, Maresca made two weird subs, like took off their best players. And it felt like at those points that things were starting to turn quite nicely for us.
I didn't realise that he'd taken off his two wingers until I watched the highlights back, and it like made me think, well, maybe we shouldn't give Farke all the credit. Maybe, like, you know, that was their bad doing that and allowing us to sort of get a foothold in the game. But I thought Bamford definitely helped massively, and James straight away was just a complete injection of energy and pace. Straight away he got the ball and skinned the guy down the wing. And at that point, I guess also we'd started to wear them down a little bit. Maybe they were getting tired because we were then starting to run at them. Somerville never touched the ball in the first half, or even in, like, you know, probably not till the 70th minute, and then started running at them and getting lots of joy. And Rutter, who had, you know, tried and failed all day, you know, things started coming off for him, and they just couldn't contain us. So I did say to the guy next to me, I said, if we get one, I think we'll get another. Because it did start to feel like the momentum was swinging even before we got the equalising goal. And then from there, it was just bedlam.
That's an interesting point about the momentum swinging, because I do think those subs on both sides made a big, big difference. In the minute Bamford and James came on, you kind of knew, right, let's go at them here. But similarly, I think Maresca was trying to be too clever by taking off Mavididi in particular, because he was causing huge problems. And that's why we moved Archie Gray over to the left and put on Conor Roberts. And the first thing Maresca did was think, oh, you know what I'll do? Because you've done that now, I'll take off Mavididi. Ha ha. It was the stupidest thing he could have done. Like, it was his most dangerous player. But you're right, though, the first thing Dan James did was a turn. The minute he got the ball, and you know, I have to give him total credit on this because he must have been watching the game and analysing it, because he got the ball, the defender was right up against him, and he used his body weight to just roll and turn and sprint forward. And he had to have been watching that from the sidelines thinking, right, that's what I'm going to do. The first time I get the ball, they're going to be right up against me. I'm going to roll him. And all credit to him. But there was one instance I thought that started to swing the momentum. And it was when Dewsbury Hall burst through on the left. And it would have been heading towards you, James. Because I think it was our right, it was their left. And he got past Archie Gray. And Ampadu was coming across. And looked for all the world that Ampadu was going to slide in on the box. It was going to be a really dodgy tackle. Like, it was going to be cutting. It would have had to have been perfect. And just as he went to slide, just when everyone thought he went to slide, he just stood his ground and kind of moved around him. And Dewsbury Hall took a dive and fell over. It was such a clever piece of defending to win that duel against Dewsbury Hall. And I think at that point, it kind of settled everyone down and go, yeah, look, we don't have to go rushing into everything. We can take our time, stay calm, defend well, and our quality will come through. I really thought that piece of defending by Ampadu just maybe triggered a little thing in the players' minds to say, we don't have to be gung-ho with this, lads. We can be cool, calm about things as we go. So I thought it was a great captain's move by him.
It's quite interesting that as well, because you think both the centre-backs were on bookings. So, like, maybe that actually calmed them down as well. You know, they had no choice but to sort of maybe rein it in a little bit and not be quite so eager and gung-ho in their defending. Yeah, good point.
It felt like Ampadu started to run at them a bit more after we made our subs, because we're like you both mentioned, we were struggling to sort of break down midfield and get the ball through midfield. So I think in the end, Ampadu was just like, well, I might as well run with it. And he did, and he charged through their midfield really well. And it was the sort of thing that was just, again, these were the little signs that we were starting to creep back into the game and stretch Leicester a bit. I mean, the main thing is that our first two goals came from the main switch of the subs. Like, you know, Conor Roberts out as a right back and Archie Gray into left back. It's like, the more you analyse that substitution, it was genius and it worked. I don't think Archie's played left back for us before, has he?
No.
And I don't think so.
Because I'm sure Farke mentioned after the game, he's like, you know, it was a risk because we've not done it before. And it's like, 17 years old, like, biggest game of the season. Just give it a go. Just go, have a go at left back. See how you get on.
It just goes to show the quality of the lad. Like, he's absolutely unbelievable. As I say, Mavididi's probably the second best left winger in the whole league. He gave him a hard time, but Gray stuck to his task. I mean, that one where Mavididi actually got through and shot it wide, Gray did excellently there. Although Mavididi got past him, Gray stayed on his shoulder all the way through. And when you're taking a shot like that, the last thing you want is someone kind of on your shoulder, pulling your jersey, getting a toe in. Gray was excellent. We say this all the time. He's going to be an absolute world superstar. He's incredible. And Farke never takes him off. So actually, when I saw Conor Roberts coming off, the first thing I said was, who's coming off? I said, like, Kamara was having a decent enough game. Gruev was there. And he never takes Gray off because he knows the quality that Archie has.
I said at halftime, I asked one of my mates, do you think he's wasted at right back? Because he was playing really well. And I was thinking, well, you know, maybe move him into midfield. Like, will that help? Because, like I said, you know, we were never able to pass through midfield. But it's weird because I feel like Gruev and Kamara both actually played well. I think they both had good games. But maybe we just need a bit more guile in there, like a bit more. Like, I do feel like Gruev's probably a little bit limited, you know, in terms of, you know, turning with the ball and getting us on the attack. And he's very one-footed. Whereas, I don't know, maybe Archie could. Well, you'd expect him to be better than both of them in midfield, wouldn't you? I mean, he was in midfield earlier this season, but I feel like he's a different player now. I feel like he's a lot better now, and I'm really excited to see him in midfield. I'm sure we'll see it at some point in the coming weeks and months. You know, there'll be games where Roberts plays, obviously, and there'll be injuries and stuff. But yeah, are you keen to see him back in there, or are you just like happy to have Kamara and Gruev doing their thing?
Whilst they're doing their thing, I don't think you can make any complaints because it's working for everyone wherever they are on the pitch. But I think there will come a time where Archie Gray probably has to move into midfield because it's his chosen position. I think it's where he will be the most useful in his career because he's obviously just got a ridiculous range of passing and vision, which is crying out to be in the middle of the park, like controlling matches. So I think it's just a time thing, isn't it? You know, and I think it's been said before, but the fullback role has sort of evolved as well, and it works a lot harder and in conjunction with midfield. I think, is it Trent Alexander-Arnold? He plays like a sort of right back, right midfield type role. And you think, you know, yeah, will those sort of players have a bearing on what happens to someone like Archie Gray in the future as well? So I don't think we need to rush him into midfield. We just need to keep giving him the time to develop, and what an amazing season so far for him to be developing in.
Yeah, I'd actually totally agree. And I see your point actually, Rocco, because I did say yesterday myself that I thought Gruev was struggling against that kind of better quality opposition that Leicester have. But I think Gruev and Kamara have enough for every other team in this league, probably bar Leicester. And I think Gray is absolutely fine on the right. I do think long term he's going to end up there. In fact, someone said to me after the game, you know, they'd be a bit worried about Kamara in the Premier League. And I said, well, don't worry about that. He's going to be back up to Archie Gray in the Premier League. No matter what happens next season, we will sign a right back to make sure Archie Gray doesn't have to play there. And Archie Gray will be our first choice centre midfielder, likely with Ampadu, in all fairness, come next season. Hopefully in the Premier League, and we can keep him for many, many seasons to come. He can win that Ballon d'Or at Elland Road. But yeah, look, I think long term he has to be playing midfield. And I think this kind of whole right back team will be a distant memory in 2 years' time, because he'll have established himself so prominently in central midfield. Because it's not just his ability on the ball, and it's actually his decision making. Like, his decision making is always, always spot on. And you can't say that for many professional footballers, let alone 17-year-olds who aren't even allowed in the dressing room to get changed before and after the game.
I bet they were slipping him WKDs and all sorts, weren't they? So Conor Roberts' goal, which I haven't even talked about, but yeah, when that went in, the roar was insane. And the guy, the big muscly guy behind me with the beard, he got me in a headlock, and it was like a loose headlock. So he'd put his arm like into my jaw, and I could feel myself feel my eyes sort of closing. I was like losing oxygen, and I was about to pass out. But it was amazing. I wouldn't change it. I felt alive afterwards. And he said to me, he was like, "I'm really sorry, mate.
Really sorry, I nearly killed you."
Yeah, but I wouldn't change it. It was amazing.
I was really happy for Roberts, you know, because I've started to feel a little bit sorry for him, because like he looks like he's going to be a bit part player. And like I've just said, like that might be wrong altogether. But like he came in, he said all the right things, and he's clearly happy to bide his time. And he even said, you know, if I don't even get on the pitch that much, you know, I'm at Elland Road, you know, for this exciting running, and he's trying to help be part of a team that gets promoted. So for him to have that moment, let alone the experience of last night, I mean, that's going to be up there with anything that's happened in his career, even if he hadn't have scored. But yeah, so it was lovely that he scored, because I really liked Tintin.
Yeah, I'm exactly the same, actually. I mean, there's two players I wanted to hear from after the match, and that was obviously Archie Gray, who we did get to hear from straight away in an interview. But the other one was Conor Roberts, because he did say when he joined the club that, you know, he'd been on the receiving end of that atmosphere previously, and he always said he wanted to be part of it. So for him to actually get the equaliser and be part of it, and I'm not sure if anyone saw his comments, but apparently his dad had driven the 5 hours up from Wales to go to the game. So for that to happen and for his dad to be there to see that goal and to experience the atmosphere, I would dare say the Roberts family are Leeds for life now after that, because that's exactly what he's dreamed about since he's been a professional footballer playing against Leeds at Elland Road. So I was really delighted for him, actually. I genuinely was. And his reaction was so cool. He's just like, yeah, yeah, that's what I do. Yeah, no problem.
Yeah. Yeah, I would not be cool in that. It's like, I don't know how.
You called me Archie Gray.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. But even then, like, I don't know how, you know, like the adrenaline through you as a fan in that moment, it's just like, you can't come down from that for hours. Like, how do you keep a calm head to then play football? It's like athletes, pro athletes are another level, aren't they? Another level. Yeah, yeah. Rutter. Jorginho, we hadn't really spoken about him, and he was annoying me, and I'll stop being annoyed with him now, because I just know that it's part of his charm, isn't it, that he'll have moments where he dwells too much on the ball, doesn't pass it quickly enough, loses it. And I don't know why I'm getting frustrated with him, because it's pointless, because he always crops up for magic. And you know, we talked about the sub being key and the goals coming from the two fullbacks, but Jorginho Rutter was the biggest part of those three goals that happened in that game. Just unbelievable. And I think something in him see like a switch sort of go, and he all of a sudden he starts to like really get a hold of it. I don't know if a player or someone says something to him or he gets annoyed, but there seems to be a spark. And you used to get that with Pablo, you know, and Pablo would just get the game by the scruff of the neck and just run with it. And I feel like that's what Jorginho is doing at the minute. Just incredible. And in the run up to the first goal, the second and the third, just amazing.
Yeah. When we signed Rutter, just to call myself out again, like I said about the transfer fee, I think I said one of the most ridiculous things is the fact that Orta, not only has he agreed to pay this astronomical fee for a guy that's done nothing, but like really what he's done is convince Radrizzani and the 49ers that one day he'll be worth like 70, 80 million, you know, and that's what I found absolutely unbelievable, because there was nothing in his career to suggest that he could be that player. But like, and I'm not saying this will happen, absolutely not, but it definitely could. Like if he really clicks, like, you know, like Henri did when he came to England, he had a few years and a couple of years where he wasn't very good. Like Rutter's, there's parts of Rutter's game where he's really rough around the edges. But like if he all clicked and he started, you know, having the composure in front of goal and making the decisions that Archie Gray does, he literally could be one of the top talents in world football. I actually completely believe that. I think he's got the skill, he's got the strength, you know, the speed. Like he's the player like I've never seen before. He's not like anybody else I can remember playing for Leeds. So like there's a long way to go before he's that level, obviously, like a hell of a long way to go, and probably won't get there. But, you know, it's there. That potential is actually there. It's incredible to see.
You know, I don't think it's that far off, to be quite honest. Like yesterday, I was pulling my hair out because I think he lost the ball like 20 times or something in the first half alone. And it's funny you mentioned that crossfield ball he hit. That was the minute the subs came on. So the subs came on and we were all kind of excited. Yeah. The first thing Jorginho did was hit a 40-yard ball straight out touch. And I was like, oh, come on, don't let this happen. You know, the momentum needs to build. But like that was probably the worst game I can remember him having, perhaps since Sheffield Wednesday at home a long, long time ago. And he was involved in all three goals. Like, that's the quality of him. That, you know, it was his shot, I think, bounced off somebody's backside, rebounded to Roberts. It was his pass to Archie Gray. And it was his mazy dribble. And if he'd have got through Vestergaard, like if Vestergaard hadn't have taken him down, that would have been goal of the season. Sorry, Patrick. But it would have been goal of the league season there and then. So, like, even on his worst days, he's contributing to three. So, perhaps at the highest level, you know, in the Premier League and even at international level for France, maybe he has a bad game and only creates one goal, you know. But that's world class. What does he do on his good games?
And speaking of Vestergaard, and on that first goal, I think he might have won. Jorginho might have won the ball back off Vestergaard, and then he went on that sort of mazy dribble into the box, which was a bit like the goal at Ipswich away, actually. And then he sort of made the pass, and Vestergaard actually he just tried to kick it away, like he flapped a foot at it, and that's when it fell to Roberts. And actually, I think Vestergaard was at fault. He was at fault for the third goal. And you think, like, if a player in our team, a defender, had made those little things, like just flapping your leg at a ball which then falls to Roberts, making that tackle at the edge of the box, our fans would be like tearing them to shreds, whoever it was. And that's nice to see as well. It's like recurring theme of someone making mistakes in their team, or just making stupid. Well, like the thing with Vestergaard was, why as well did he run up to the referee to contest that free kick? Just absolute, yeah, insane.
He cleaned them out.
Yeah.
That was his 10th booking of the season as well. So that's, he's out now for two games, which is fantastic. But while we're on Rutter, in their box, was he trying to take it down and clear it?
For the goal.
Daka's goal. Yeah, I think we got lucky there. Like, again, I don't care. Like, these things happen throughout the season, and I still don't want VAR. I know that one went in our favour, and others won't. But, you know, suck it up. And in fairness to Maresca, he didn't even complain after it. Like, he just got on with it as well. But, like, 100% Jorginho was just trying to take that down and whack it away, and he miscontrolled it. Good finish by Daka, actually.
It's starting to even out now, isn't it? Because we got like the raw deal of four or five that cost us a fair few points earlier in the season, where VAR obviously would have come to our rescue. But we have had a few now come our way, and I don't think it's normal that Leeds do end up like getting like things evening out for us. It doesn't seem to have happened in the past, so I'll take that. Happy with that. And it just shows again VAR's a load of bollocks. You know, the best teams are going to finish, well, any team's going to finish where they deserve to, regardless of, you know, stopping every game like continuously. So anyway, it's not going anywhere, is it?
Dan James was a big fan of his petty crime where he pushed that player over, their left back, and when he was on the floor, kicked the ball into his chest. It was lovely. You could just tell he was just trying to boil them, like get them to lose their heads. And the mate, Chowdhury, to be fair, ran back, and I could see like he pushed everyone away and was like, just calm down, like move away, because he knew what Dan James' game was in that moment. But I loved it. I loved the pettiness.
Speaking of that one, I think that was actually Ricardo that he got in on. And again, looking at Dan James and thinking he's done his homework, Ricardo was on a yellow card for a brilliant tackle he made around the halfway line, where he didn't touch the player whatsoever, won the ball cleanly. It wasn't even a foul, let alone a yellow card. The ref yellow carded him. So I wouldn't be surprised if you're right. Dan James was trying to rile him, thinking, look, I'll take a yellow card. You get a yellow card. And that'll leave 11 on 10. But yeah, like a bit after Dan James. He's so Leeds these days. He's so Leeds.
I think that was a bookable offence, actually. His response to what James did. Because James actually didn't do anything wrong. Well, nothing out of the laws of the game anyway. So that reaction, I think that would have been a first booking anyway.
Yeah. Where do we go from here?
Third goal, James.
Yeah.
Oh, should we do arches again?
I told you I needed help. I'm so tired.
We all do. My word. I got like 2 hours sleep last night and then I was awake again. Like, it's just impossible, isn't it? The adrenaline running through you. I had a shower when I got in just to try and calm myself down, but then I started watching all the highlights. It's like
I had a haircut today and I was literally falling asleep in the chair. I'm not joking. I was just so tired. And but the first, this is a proper side note, but you know, you're coming of age when the first thing your hairdresser or your barber goes to cut is your eyebrows. Not even joking. Third goal. Let's go.
Dan James Appreciation Society.
And Patrick Bamford. Striker's instincts again.
Yeah, the striker's instinct to run in the opposite direction. No one goes over to him. In fairness, he owned up to it in his post-match interview, which is great.
But yeah, I think he did it on purpose. I think it was a great goal. I think the keeper would have saved it otherwise. Good free kick, well worked, straight off the training ground. Yeah, I loved it. And do you know what I loved as well? Like the way that it went in, like, especially from where I was, or maybe for anybody, I don't know, but like the way that it sort of, you knew it was in, but you're waiting for the net to ripple. You're thinking, well, he's not saved it. It must be in. And then the net ripples a little bit. And it's just like, oh, like that moment was unbelievable. I had no one, like everyone just sort of like dispersed around me. And I turned around to hug someone. I was like, wanted to just bear hug someone. And it's like an 8-year-old woman stood behind me. So yeah, I avoided that one.
So she got it, did she? She got it.
Yeah.
It's tackled.
That's been his plan all year. He's been trying to steal a kiss.
Yeah, listen, lads, if we score a tour, can yous all move away? I think I'm in here. Nora,
wow. Oh, no, I never realised we'd go there, but we have. That's how excited we are. It's stupid, isn't it? Brilliant. Yeah, so that was, what was that, 93rd minute, 94th minute, something like that?
Something like that.
It was just finished.
Ah, it was just, yeah, party time. And we were already singing Leeds Are Falling Apart again, ringing around the ground. And then for that to go in, it's just unbelievable. I don't even remember anything after that, apart from just going into the celebrations for the final whistle. And then, I mean, that was something else. Like, we've never seen that before. It was insane. I think it's funny on Archie's interview. And he's like, look, all these people are still here at 10:30 p.m.
Yeah. So it was way past his
bedtime. How old actually are you?
He'd skipped in the night garden tonight for a...
You know what, Rocco, I have to call you out, though, because I think you jinxed yourself on the atmosphere thing, because you were at a Sparta Prague versus Galatasaray during the week, weren't you? You were obviously texting in the group about which we wanted Sparta Prague to win that one. And you said it was going to be difficult to top the atmosphere of that match.
I know. I really, truly believed it. And well, it was. I mean, we had to bring out an all-time classic to top it. So yeah, fair play to Sparta. It was a great evening. In fact, my voice was struggling at the Leeds game because I think I was the most passionate fan in the ground, to be honest. I was going crazy when Sparta beat them lot. So yeah, it was quite a couple of days for me.
Just to call Rocco out again, actually. We were supposed to meet for pizza and he said, I don't think I could face pizza. I've eaten loads of rubbish this week. You know, it's like... And you call yourself Italian, Rocco Dave.
I've got no defence.
But Leeds do. Oh, dear. Stats. We got any stats? There's got to be some stats running around, isn't there?
I know we've won nine wins in a row. Nine league games in a row. That's a good. That's the best stat, isn't it?
I think we're second in the league. It's also a nice stat. We're 5 points ahead of Southampton. That's also a nice stat after today.
Yeah, some all right results going our way. Yeah, Southampton ended up losing at home to Millwall, which is a crazy result, a brilliant result for us. And also, I think like a good reminder for us that there are a bunch of teams that are battling to survive down the bottom, and we've got to play them. No game is easy. And that is, the proof is there for us to see and definitely remind us. One thing that I saw was expected goals against, and ours is ridiculously low. It's like at 0.8 goals per 90 minutes. And Leicester's is actually much higher, which suggests that they have had like a few more hairy moments than us, which I didn't realise about Vestergaard being out, but it makes me think like slightly weakened defence. What are they going to be like up against some sides that are sort of battling for their survival as well? So it could get interesting. Like I said to you in the group, Rocco, earlier this week, if we beat Leicester, I think we're on for promotion. But I still can't go there. But I'm just glad that there is a bit of fight that we can fight for, like the title. Like I love that we can chase that, and not just thinking over our shoulder. I think looking forward is the best position to be in.
Ah, yeah. And Leicester have got they've got a tough game in the FA Cup midweek away to a Premier League team. So, you know, that could well be three defeats.
Liverpool.
On the bounce. And is it Liverpool? Right. So, probably lose three in a row. He's out. I mean, to be fair, even though we've beat them and we've gone within six, I think Friday night made me feel like less chance of us actually winning it, because they were very impressive. And that Fies guy at the back, I thought he was unbelievable, really. I thought he was incredible. Apart from getting us the goals, his defending was like sensational. Some amazing last-ditch blocks, and just looked an absolute class act. So I'm sure they'll be absolutely fine. The main thing is definitely looking behind us over our shoulder, and we've got a nice little gap there to Southampton, but Ipswich, I mean, they've proved they're a really good side. We knew they were going to have a really sticky patch at some point, and they have. And hopefully they'll show some inconsistency through the rest of the season, because, like you say, we are going to drop points as well. So I'm sure it's not going to be completely plain sailing, but I'm completely convinced that we'll do it.
Yeah, I've got a bit of a hot take on this one now, lads.
Oh, there we go.
Maybe bookmark it. I think we're going to win a league. I think we've booked flights for Southampton, right? And the idea behind it was that if it's a dead rubber, so be it. We go into the playoffs. If we need to win to go to the playoffs, fair enough. I actually think we're going to need to win or draw that to win the league. I think we're going to have promotion sewn up, and it's going to be between us and Leicester in the last game of the season. And I think it's going to be in our hands. I think we're going to be just ahead of them.
The only thing in my hands at the minute is my head. I just can't do it. Like my head cannot go there. It's like, I love that people can, but I'm too scarred.
Well, what about this one then? On the penultimate game of the season, QPR away, is being played 50 years to the day. That's the 27th of April, 1974, when Don Revie's Leeds team celebrated their final championship win. So if that's not the stars aligning, I don't know what is.
Spot the best-selling author.
Yeah, The Sons of Revie is coming out on the 15th of April, everyone.
We will have it on leedsthat.com, where you can, we'll set up a pre-order. So have a look on the website. We'll let you know on an episode when that's going to go on there. But yeah, you will be able to buy it on our website. And you can buy some hoodies. We're all wearing hoodies right now, aren't we?
Yeah.
Uniform.
No one can see it. We all sat up straight to show it. But no one can see it.
I have to get a picture of this for the web.
God.
Good stuff. Right. Man of the match. Player ratings, I guess.
Yeah. Do we do man of the match first or player ratings?
Man of the match.
Okay. Should we make Dara go first so I can think?
Yeah, I just went silent.
What do you mean?
Copy one of you two.
You're just going to say Rodon again. You say Rodon every week. It was so funny last week. Listening, and James said to you, so are you going to go for it? And you stopped for a minute. I was like, what's he even thinking for? It's going to be Rodon.
I was quite embarrassed, because afterwards everyone was saying that like he had his worst game for weeks. I'm like, bloody hell, I gave him a 9 out of 10.
For me, I think definitely Ampadu. I thought Ampadu was fantastic. Captain's performance, on a booking, that classy piece of defending, running through midfield, opened it up Leicester. I just thought he was brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
He was thinking about going for Fies, match winner, and he had a great game, like I said. Thought Bamford was extremely important and got a goal, but I think I am going to go for Archie just because he got the goal and I'm feeling in that sort of mood. And like, it was just such a unbelievably historic moment. So happy for him. So go for Archie for the hell of it.
I am torn on this one because part of me wants to give it to Melia because I thought he was phenomenal and he made some massive saves for us. One in the first half as well. We tipped it over the bar. It really kept us in the game. I want to give it to Archie because being asked to play in a position you've never played before in the biggest game of your career at 17-year-old, as at 17 years of age, is just crazy as well. But because I was so annoyed at him and because he did essentially make those three goals for us, it's got to be Jorginho. Like, I just, it's unbelievable what he does in key moments. And I think he's class. Like what you're saying, Rocco, there's headroom there for him to grow into, to be potentially one of the best players who's ever played for Leeds. And I hope we can evolve with him because he's class, and he's a class human being as well. The whole Flamingo Land videos they did on the YouTube and the app and whatnot. It was just so funny. If you've not seen that, watch it. It's brilliant.
Player ratings. Okay. Melier 8 then, I suppose.
Terrible 7. Yeah.
Let's give him some credit for narrowing the angle, although I don't really think it made much difference, but maybe he got in the players' heads a bit and they knew they had a Spider-Man to try and beat, so they were going for the corners.
Harsh yellow card on Melier.
Oh my God, ridiculous. That was ridiculous. It was like his first moment of booking him, of time wasting, and like the yellow card was out unbelievably quickly. That is, I was so, so angry at that. So yeah, let's give him an 8 then, yeah.
When he got booked, actually, I did think of you, Rocco. I thought, I bet Rocco is absolutely livid now, but then he's probably also saying, referee's best one we've ever had at Elland Road.
Well, he didn't give that foul in the lead up to, was it, whose goal was it? I don't know. There was a bit of a potential foul, wasn't there? Yeah, I was happy with the ref. 10 out of 10 for him. Archie, give him an 8.
8 for Archie.
I thought he really struggled. Are we going to go 5 or should we say 6? Oh,
6.
Junior.
Probably just because of the quality of the opposition. If he does that against kind of Hull or something, he's a 5. But he was poor.
I did notice he was really high. Like play. I know we spoke earlier in the season about Ayling like being right high up, like alongside the forward line, and he was playing really high up. Actually, just noticed that. But anyway, 6 for him. Rodon now. I thought he had an absolute shocker in the first half, at least. I don't know, did he clear one off the line in the second half? He made a very important headed interception, but I mean, I couldn't give him more than a 6.
I'd push it to a 7, again, quality of the opposition. But yeah, he was poor on the ball in the second half, very much so in the first half. But defensively, I think he was still pretty sound.
James, what are you saying? Final vote.
I didn't think any of us were good in the first half, and he was... there were so many balls that were just pinging between him, Melier and Ampadu that were just then not going anywhere because they were just structured so well, Leicester, that sort of threw him off because he didn't really know what to do with it. So you could argue maybe it's just as big an issue for Farker as it was Rodon in that the players didn't know what to do in that situation. But I think 7 is probably fair. Not his best game, definitely not his worst.
Fair enough. Ampadu, should we give him an 8 for his rallying second half?
Yeah, he was awesome.
Okay. And then we have...
Quick one on Ampadu. I like that he went past the Leicester changing rooms shouting, huge, huge game as well. Good lad. Brilliant stuff. Maresca.
I never made that connection when I saw it the first time. I just noticed, well, I think someone tweeted it and pointed it out.
For anyone... For their manager.
I know.
Why would you do that?
Yeah, we'll talk about this very briefly, actually. So if anyone didn't catch this, Maresca, their manager earlier in the week, said that it was just another game for Leicester, but it was a huge, huge game for Leeds. And I can sort of see it. He's like trying to pile the pressure on Leeds, like to try and make our players think that it's a big game and play to that occasion rather than being settled in it just being another match. But it just came across as him being a bit of a dickhead, basically.
Yeah, and then we were able to throw it back in his face straight after the game, because every player after the game was just going up to Leicester going, yeah, huge game, lads, huge game.
It was a schoolboy error. It was ridiculous. Like, even if, I don't know, just stupid. Like, and you've seen, Ampadu doing that, and Yonto as well, as he put something on Instagram, I think, like, mentioning that. So, yeah, clearly the players used it to fire him up. So, yeah, that was a ridiculous comment. So, Gruev and Ampadu, couple of sevens, do you reckon?
Kamara.
Ampadu's got his eight.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think a couple of sevens. There was one really nice one, actually, with Gruev, where we had a corner, and they broke from it. I think it was Dewsbury Hall was a man furthest up the pitch. He was probably on our right-hand side, and he was sprinting towards goal. And Gruev looked like he was 2 feet behind him and somehow managed to lunge forward, get a toe on it, and put it out for a throw-in. And I just thought, ah, well done. That was really class. I think for that alone, he deserves a seven. Tough night for him, same as Rodon on the ball. He didn't have options to pass to. But his tackling is so important sometimes in those defensive positions.
I honestly thought he was just taking one for the team then. I thought he was just trying to bring him down and take a yellow card. And then he got, what an amazing tackle that. Then the fertile four, we have, give him a seven in the end.
Yep.
Yeah, I think Choudhury did a job on him, I think, more than anything. He's Somerville's best when he's got his, when he's turned towards goal. I think seven has done so much for us this season. He's 3 goals shy of top goal scorer in the league, and I think he could potentially close that gap before the end of the season and probably be top goal scorer.
Yeah,
there's a few times where he had them on toast in the box, and he could have shot, I'm sure, about it, and he just kept going. He's just, I don't know, all our players, we've said it before, but so many times where you think we can pull the trigger sooner.
Yeah, they were doubling and tripling up on him, as you kind of need to do, and only for the fact that they actually do have quality players. It worked. And Millwall or Huddersfield try that against him, he'll just beat all three players and fire in the box. So, bit of credit to the opposition there as well for doing a job on him. But yeah, he's still a game guy. And the fact that he has two or three players up opens up space for other people. So, yeah, I think a seven's probably a fair score.
Willie is a funny one here, because I actually thought he had a great first half. I thought he looked like probably our best player, but he screwed up that chance that we had. And let's not forget, that marking for the goal was an absolute disgrace. Like, what is he doing? He just completely stopped and left him. That was unforgivable. I don't know. I don't have a clue why he's marking him in the first place. That's weird. But what the hell was he doing? So, yeah. And then second half, I thought he was unlucky to come off. And he was probably unhappy about coming off. But he did sprint off and not just sort of sulk and walk. So that was good. Another point in his camp. So, seven.
You only run off at that speed to hide your tears, don't you? That's all it was.
I had the benefit, obviously, of a lot of replays of that goal. I have to say, it did me head in for two reasons. One, they only had 5 players in the box. We had all 11 players in our box, and they still won 2 headers. So that was very annoying. But the other one was, we were doing a zonal marking system at the time, and Nanto was the only one who had a job on anyone, and it was Fies. And his job wouldn't have been to mark him. His job would have been to block his run. And that's what he actually failed to do. So, if he blocks the run, and then the zone kicks in thereafter to win any header that comes into your area, that's where how that system works. But yeah, he totally shut off for that. So I think a seven is probably a fair result, because he did have a good game in the first half.
Yeah, and then Ruter, should we give him a? Oh, this is stupid. For 17 minutes, he was probably on a 5, but I was about to say 9. what do we do with that?
8. Let's go 8. Yeah. That's fair.
Yeah, okay. And we've spoken enough about him, haven't we?
If he hadn't misplaced 20 passes, he would have been a 9 or a 10. Basically.
And then, oh God, yeah, Peru. I mean, I don't know. I mean, 6, I suppose.
I think you have to be a bit generous towards Peru a little bit, because obviously his supply line is supposed to be coming from Nanto, Somerville and Ruter. And certainly Ruter and Somerville weren't doing anything for him, even though Nanto was doing a little bit. But yeah, he did squander that chance. I wouldn't go as far as 6. I'd probably give him a 7, because I think he did do a few nice little bits, but he did have a little bit to make up for as well with regards to Ruter, who was giving the ball away so often and picked in that first half.
There was a header that he had as well. A big chance with a header, wasn't it? Was it a big chance? It looked like simple from where I was, but
he was quite far away, wasn't he? And I think it was probably more difficult than it looked from where we were at the other end of the ground.
It was a very difficult chance.
Okay, fair enough. I think we should mark Connor Roberts, absolutely, for his goals. Who else came on at that? Oh, so let's mark James and Bamford as well, for sure. So, Roberts, do we give him an 8 for his goal?
Yeah.
I'd go 8 across the board. Like, you've got 2 goals and a great performance from Dan James. I'll just go 3 8s. So,
yeah,
24.
Let's do it. Done. Great stuff. Cool. Player ratings. We analysed a bit more there. We almost sound semi-professional with Dara getting involved, don't we? So, Chelsea, big game on Tuesday night, FA Cup. I'm glad that no one's really mentioned this. It's just all been about the league and getting out of the league, and that's good in itself. And good game. Could be a chance to bring some players back in, get some more minutes who've been injured or just haven't had the game time. Yeah, I think let's see what happens there. Are you guys bothered about it that much? Either way, I am bothered about it. I don't want to pretend that, but I'm just so focused on the league.
No, I think it's a nice distraction, isn't it? At this point, like you're nine wins in a row in the league. You're up to second place. You've created a bit of a gap between us and Southampton. We're chasing the top spot. Chelsea away in the FA Cup. It's just a nice little distraction. Win it, great. Lose it, don't care. Fine.
I'm going. I'm in the home end, which is a shame. So, yes, I'm bothered. But I don't know what I actually expect him to play a full strength team, but I'm not actually sure if I want him to or not. I just hate to, flog all our players and then go to Huddersfield and slip up. But look, if you offered me to win one of those two games, I would go with beating Chelsea, rightly or wrongly. I don't know. Do you agree? Would you rather beat Chelsea and lose to Huddersfield or the other way around?
No, I'd rather beat Huddersfield.
Yeah. Would you?
Yeah, definitely. The past has haunted me with the FA Cup, with runs that have distracted us in the league. So that's etched in my memory. I think Huddersfield in itself will be a tough game. Like, Huddersfield hate us. We got a brilliant win today
for the new manager.
Yeah, they did. And the new manager bounce is never fun, is it? So a difficult game going there. Big game for them, big game for us, because they're in and around the danger zone. So, yeah. Anything to talk about on Huddersfield from you guys?
No, I don't know anything.
Nah, they mean nothing to us.
This is what worries me. Complacency creeps in when everyone's just like, oh, just the dog buggers, aren't they?
To be honest, you've got to say it's a huge, huge, huge game for them.
Oh, dear. No. I'm not cutting it out, but I have to address it because Rocco, you say this stuff and it just puts me on edge.
I don't think Rocco has that power, James. I really don't.
Don't know. Maybe he does. Maybe the universe. Cool. Well, thanks ever so much for coming on, Dara. It's a pleasure to have you on as always. And you bring some credence to our nonsense, which is great. So thank you.
Yeah, always a pleasure, gentlemen.
Rocco, have a great time in the crapital. Watching at Leeds United versus Chelsea. Our priority is Huddersfield. So we shall see everyone after that game next weekend. In the meantime, soak it up. Enjoy the rest of this weekend after an unbelievable win at home to Leicester, and have a great week. And we will see you soon.
Network.